Hi, I'm Julian Glover, an actor, and I'm speaking to you on Cracking the Code of Spy Movies with Dan and Tom. So let's get off and have a chat.
This is the story of how For Your Eyes Only, a movie, was created. Hi, this is Dan.
And Tom.
Of SpyMovieNavigator.com and our show, Cracking the Code of Spy Movies, your spy movie team bringing you the best coverage of spy movies in the world for almost 5 years. All right, let's go. First, we want to look at how EM Productions came up with the concept for Your Eyes Only. Because Fleming only wrote a short story on For Your Eyes Only.
This was part of the short story collection, and it included From a View to a Kill, For Your Eyes Only, Quantum of Solace, Risiko, The Hildebrand Rarity. Yep. And as a side note, these stories were originally published separately in different publications before they compiled them into a collection in 1960. Now, eventually, what we know, For Your Eyes Only, was adapted into a film with the same name starring Roger Moore and James Bond. And I say what we know here is because it was adapted, but it wasn't just For Your Eyes Only that impacted this movie.
Yeah, I mean, if you read the stories, and we're going to try to look at how the characters in the movie For Your Eyes Only came to be, because you'll look at the short stories from Fleming, and there's a lot of differences here. So we're going to kind of see what happened here, because we like this concept of what EM Productions has done over the years and over the decades with the Fleming novels and short stories. If you read the short stories, then you know that the film's plot is not directly based on any of these single stories from this collection, but it incorporates elements from a couple of these stories. EM Productions was very good at taking these pieces from the Fleming works and writing them into the screenplays for various James Bond movies. We did an episode on the Hildebrand Rarity and how its main character, Milton Crest, made it into the License to Kill movie. All right, so in reality, the writers looked, of course, at the short stories. In the short story, which is a fun read, by the way, we're introduced to the Havelocks. They own land in Jamaica, which has been in their family for 300 years. And there's a daughter as well, but in the short story, she's named Judy, whereas in the movie, she's named Melina. Well, I like Melina better. I think that was an upgrade right there on the writer's part.
I love how they just change names.
Especially with Carol Bouquet. Yeah.
Well, yeah, all okay. Right.
In the short story, the Havelocks are not looking for the sunken St. George or the ATAC. They're not looking for that in the short story. They're actually living this peaceful life in Jamaica. And the main characters in the short story are the Havelocks, James Bond, M, to a degree, and Hammerstein and Gonzalez as the villain.
Wait. There's no Columbo. There's no Christados.
There's no Columbo.
There's no Kriegler. There's no Locke.
There's no, okay. No, none of so, those guys are
so
there.
Adapted from might be a good way to put this.
Well, hey, definitely nowhere in the short story, but you mentioned Columbo and Christatos. They are in another Fleming short story, Risiko. And a lot of their characteristics from the short story made it into the characters as played in the movie For Your Eyes Only. So again, the Havelocks, Columbo, Christatos, they have nothing to do with each other in the short stories. They're completely separate stories.
Wait, and I'm guessing there's no Blofeld looking guy being dropped on a smokestack at the beginning.
No, he's nowhere either. No, he's nowhere either. And neither is the visit to the grave, the Tracy's gravesite. That's not in the short story either. But hey, that was a great, one of my favorite parts of any pre-title sequence. Was that part. All right. So the writers for the movie For Your Eyes Only were creative.
Okay, come so on. That obviously means this is before Purvis and Wade.
Oh my God, another Purvis and Wade. Slam!
Fortunately, For Your Eyes Only is credited to Richard Maybaum, Michael G. Wilson, and Ian Fleming. So
yeah,
we actually have a story here, and it's a story adapted from a couple of stories. That's interesting.
Yeah. They brought in Christatos and Columbo from Risiko. And a lot of what is brought into the movie, their businesses, who's the good guy and who's the villain, the restaurant scenes, and the recording of the conversation between Christatos and Bond, all of that is brought in directly from the short story. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, we also see Gonzalez is brought into the movie as the henchman who's working for Christatos, not Hammerstein.
Yeah, he got hired by Christatos to kill.
So let's, I want to make sure I've got this right then. What the writers did is they substituted Christatos from Risiko for Hammerstein in the short story. So they just swapped the characters and created a new villain out of him.
I which think is kind so, of cool. Yeah. I think they integrated them into the story, which again, they're not part of the story. And yeah, so Hammerstein is out in the movie. Christatos and Columbo are in, but again, it's a little different relationship. But yeah, Gonzalez was in both the short story and the movie. Gonzalez is short-lived in the movie.
Literally.
Yeah. In the short story, it's like he's there till the end. So, okay. Interesting stuff, though. But
yeah, so then we've got, that means that the stories of Columbo and Christatos unfold in the movie. And since we know that Gonzalez works for Christatos, and we can now unfold their Risiko story here in the movie, as we're melding the two stories together and the characters from the different stories.
Yeah, which I think was really clever. And when you look, you watch the movie, you not for a second are you thinking that these things don't fit together well. They actually did an excellent job of taking these pieces from two short stories and weaving them into a great story. The integration is clever. And we have Melina Havelock, the daughter of the murdered Havelocks, her parents, in both the short story and the movie. As we mentioned, the daughter was named Judy in the short story, and her weapon of choice was a bow and arrow. That gets changed, of course, to the crossbow, which is much cooler.
Oh, way cooler, way cooler. And easier to handle than a bow and arrow.
Yeah, yeah. And Carol Bouquet looks great wielding the crossbow, I have to say. crossbows have been around since...
Wielding a crossbow or not, she's going to look great.
Yeah, crossbows have been around since about 400 BCE. So, I mean, they've been around. So it was a nice upgrade in the movie. In both the short story, For Your Eyes Only, and the movie, the daughter of the Havelocks is seeking revenge for the murder of her parents. They are murdered for different reasons in the short story versus the movie, but she is out for revenge. And in both cases, it's going to involve Bond.
Well, so in the short story, this one was kind of interesting to me. M wants Bond to go kill Hammerstein and Gonzalez because the Havelocks were friends of M's. Which
yes, they were. They were very good friends of M's, and he actually stood up for their wedding. They were friends for a long, long time. So yeah, M wants Bond to go kill Hammerstein and Gonzalez, kind of like revenge. Yeah.
So wait a second. So M wants us to be a hit for M's own revenge, and he wants Bond to do it?
Yeah, I mean, go figure.
That's totally reversed from what we saw in License to Kill when M revoked Bond's license for wanting to go do a revenge kill.
Yeah.
And M also didn't want Bond to do a revenge kill in Quantum of Solace. So it's interesting to see that in the short story here that it was reversed and that M was like, yeah, I've got this license to kill guy. I'm going to let him go ahead and take out my revenge on somebody.
Yeah. M did think about it a little bit in the short story, thinking, yeah, you know, what am I doing here kind of thing. But he wanted it done because these were bad people, bad people.
Okay. So now in the movie, of course, he's got to find the ATAC on the sunken St. George before anyone else does. And it falls in. Yeah, it's the MacGuffin. You know, so he's got to find it before anybody else does, and we don't want it to fall in the wrong hands. But it's a MacGuffin because what it is doesn't really matter. But anyways, I said ATAC.
Yeah.
It was the Automatic Targeting Attack Communicator.
Sure.
Which was used by the Ministry of Defense to coordinate the Royal Navy's fleet of submarines.
Yeah.
Dangerous, so,
if it got in the wrong hands.
Yeah, and a fairly important piece of tech, right?
Yeah.
So Bond and the daughter, Judy / Melina, are involved in both the short story and the movie in tracking down the killers of her parents, but for very different reasons.
Yeah, very different reasons. In the short story, you see, it was more a real estate kill. This estate that had been in their family for 300 years, this guy, Gonzalez, was representing Hammerstein to acquire the property in one way or another. A little different.
All right, we're going to get it won by hook or crook, right?
Yeah. Christatos becomes the villain to beat here to get to the ATAC because he was going to sell it to the Russians. So now we got Christatos interwoven into the story. Nice. So now Gonzalez works for Christatos in the movie, basically. He gets hired by him to go kill the Havelocks. We have a nice, neat package here. Bond wants to stop Christatos and those guys from getting the ATAC, and Melina wants revenge for her parents' murder, and so Bond must figure out between Columbo and Christatos who the real evil one is, and he has to do that in the short story in Risico, where Columbo and Christatos appear. He's got to figure that out as well. Melina's and Bond's missions in both the short story and the movie dovetail. They have to work together. Even though at one point Bond said to Judy, Melina, in the short story, don't be a silly bitch. Put that damn thing down. This is a man's work. Oh boy.
But kind of reminds you of man. Kind of reminds you of man talk in Goldfinger.
Yeah, right. Yeah, man talk. Yeah, but she's very tough, though. She's a very tough woman in the short story as well, and she handles him pretty damn well in the short story. So I have to say that she was a pretty strong character in the short story.
Yeah, now another thing, too, that they changed that I kind of like, and I think it's why we have the different names for the daughter, is the locations are different.
Mm-hmm.
In the short story, For Your Eyes Only, Bond is tracking down Hammerstein and Gonzalez in the northeastern United States via contacts from Canada.
Yep.
So they're nowhere near Greece. Judy makes sense for a name here for the daughter, where Melina makes more sense when they move it to Greece.
Yeah.
And likewise, in Risico, Bond starts seeking out his contact, Christatos, in Italy at the Albergo Colomba d'Oro.
Yeah, yes, yeah. And the story we're telling here shows how resourceful that Ian Productions and their screenwriters are in putting together a great James Bond movie in For Your Eyes Only, because it's one of Roger Moore's best outings as James Bond. And as you mentioned, Tom, the screenwriters here were Richard Maybaum and Michael G. Wilson, and it was directed by John Glenn. This is one of the best outings, again, for Moore in any Bond movie. So, really cool.
And I agree with that, and I'm so glad Purvis and Wave weren't involved. I will never live that down. And you know, I'm gonna meet them someday, and they're gonna be the best guys in the world. I don't know them personally, I just don't like their writing. But anyways, many components here, let's get back to this. All right. So many components were taken from the short stories and either enhanced, changed slightly, or changed a lot, like the locations being totally different. But the guts of the stories are Ian Fleming's.
Yep.
And at the end of the game for the movie, For Your Eyes Only was a skillful blend of trying to take these different Fleming stories, give them a new twist, and it was really one of the best.
Yeah, I mean, many characters came along, including the Havelocks, Gonzalez, Christatos, and Columbo. Even Liesl, who was in the novel, was described as a luxurious whore, but in the movie she was class. Her fate is different in each of the from the short story and versus the movie. But again, the character was lifted out of the short stories and brought into the movie to one degree or another. With one role or another, different roles. So many elements and plot points were brought along as well, from Risico, which by the way means risk in Italian, of course, like the restaurant scene with Bond and Christatos and their conversation being recorded by Columbo in the short story. It was an excellent part of the short story because it's a very convoluted way that they move the recording device to the table with Christatos and Bond to record it. It's much simpler in the movie when they added in the little vase thing on the table. But here they were moving chairs around and saying, oh no, this is going to be for this foretop over here. And then they moved the chair. Now we're going to move that back over here. Go replace that chair. And then eventually got the chair with the recorder at Bond's table with Christatos. It was very, very cool how they did it in the short story. And great read.
Yeah, but when you get into a movie, you need it a little more simple, so that's good. Yeah. Otherwise, it becomes farcical, right? Yeah. Now, you talk about this restaurant scene. Right?
Yeah.
After we did the interview episode that we did with Julian Glover, talked to us about the, and every time I see this scene now, it comes to my mind, Roger Moore pranked him during this scene. It was a long, the multiple take scene. There were lots of people involved. And at one point, Roger Moore has his wife come over and dump a plate of food on Glover. Just,
yeah. I mean, she was like the waiter. She was disguised.
Now every time I see that scene, I have to think of that. So
it's great when Julian tells the story. You got to listen to that episode. It's a good one. Julian has some great stories. All right. And also the woman having a scene with Columbo in the restaurant. Remember, she throws the wine in his face and makes the big stink and all that kind of stuff. That's in the it's in the short story as well. And then the whole part of playing the tape for Bond so that Bond can hear what Columbo recorded, Cristato's telling Bond, and so on. All of that is in the short story and in the movie as well. And when they were aboard the ship and he's telling him, hey, come on, we'll toast to I'll save that for another day. Bond says, until we're friends or whatever, until he figures it out. And all of this is in the short story part as well. And yeah, you know, even giving Bond his gun back after their conversations, the attack on the warehouse, though it's very different in the short story versus the movie, it's all taken, these components are taken out of the short stories and woven beautifully into the movie.
Yeah, and it's really cool how they do that, because I've got one scene from this one short story and I wrote it this way, and then we tweak it, like you're saying, you know, getting the bug onto the table, right? I mean, so the novel has to be much more detailed to let us go, to let us know what's going on. But yeah, in the movie, they can just show us.
Yeah, right. And Columbo becomes the ally of Bond and Melina in the movie. And Melina is really nowhere in the short story, Risico. So it's like, here they are working together there. I thought it was really cool how they did this, and very different than some of the other things. Like we took Milton Kress from the Hildebrand Rarity. Hey, that was one person, one scene. This is like a whole integration of a couple of short stories.
Taking a couple stories and putting, I mean, that's all in a day's work for Michael G. Wilson and Richard Maybaum.
Yeah.
They can extract the elements and the characters from two very different short stories and come up with a tremendous hit movie. For Your Eyes Only. I mean, For Your Eyes Only did just under $200 million in the 1981 world box office numbers. It was the second most successful movie other than Moonraker, which did just over $210 million.
Yeah.
And it will not be topped at the box office again until all the way until 1995 with GoldenEye, which was over $350 million.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not bad.
Yeah, really. That'll work.
Congrats, Ian Productions. I mean, who has a history of producing terrific James Bond movies, and we always look forward to more, even after No Time to Die.
Well, and with grosses like that, they can afford to make these movies.
Yeah.
As complex or as elaborate as they do, because they know they're going to get their money back.
Yeah, yeah. A few hundred million here and there comes in handy.
Yeah.
All right,
Dan, if you could get me a few hundred million, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll try. All right. Let's talk about one last element that is in the movie For Your Eyes Only. This one might have been influenced, I think, by a previous movie. At the very end of For Your Eyes Only, what happens to the ATAC?
James Bond throws it over the edge of the cliff at Meteora.
Yeah, right?
Yep, that's true.
And who was trying to retrieve it at that point?
That would have been Gogol.
Yeah. The Russians had landed, right? They landed the helicopter there.
Yep.
And they're trying to get the ATAC from Cristatos, who was going to sell it to the Russians. Man.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And so that was pretty cool, because it's like they're all up there. And then all of a sudden, Bond just takes this thing and whips it over the edge.
Yeah.
And it smashes into 1,000 pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe more. And then Gogol's kind of looking at that going, oh, man, he was so close to getting the ATAC, and now it's gone.
And what does Bond say? Bond has a great response to that.
Yeah.
That's detente, comrade. You don't have it. I don't have it.
It was really nice.
Yeah, that's great. All right.
Yeah.
So there you go. You got a standoff for the MacGuffin there. Well, so I said that this scene may have been influenced by another spy movie, and we have this standoff, like we said, for the MacGuffin. Well, let's look at the 1968 movie, Ice Station Zebra, which is a pretty good spy movie, actually. The film's MacGuffin is the film from a fallen Soviet satellite. that has photos of all the missile bases and sites in the US and the UK, and even the Soviet sites, as it was shooting photos all along as it was up in space. The captain of the submarine Tigerfish is Commander James Faraday, played by Rock Hudson, by the way. And he has the film when the Soviets arrive in force on this icy, icy plane. So the Soviets want the film. They have the Americans and the other sub personnel outnumbered, and Faraday gives it up. Why? He knows that the Russian commander is going to attach this bomb-rigged canister to a balloon to float up and be captured by one of their aircraft above. So the film is like the ATAC, all right?
Yeah, and the cool thing, too, as you say that, with the it's going to go up in the balloon and it's going to be captured by the airplane. We saw that at the ending of one of the Bond movies, right?
Yeah.
In Thunderball?
The Skyhook.
Yeah, the Skyhook. It's the exact same concept here.
And the Skyhook was a real invention. It actually did work. But Faraday, unbeknownst to anybody else, and certainly unbeknownst to the Soviets, at Ice Station Zebra, he found a detonator. And when the balloon with the film canister is aloft, he blows it up.
Now, that was a little bit of a stretch, but I won't go there. Let's.
Neither he nor the Soviets have it now. So this denies either side the locations of the other's missile silos. And the Soviet colonel concedes that both his and Faraday's missions are over. As he says,
Commander Faraday, the capsule has been destroyed. Our mission is therefore accomplished, at least in part. Your mission is also accomplished to the same degree. It is unfortunate that the officer was shot apparently by accident. Yes. Other conflict between us would be pointless.
I love that.
There you go. All right, there you go. The ATAC is gone. The Russians can't have it. Bond didn't have it. Here, the film is gone. The Russians can't have it. The Americans and British can't have it. You think one influenced the other? Absolutely, because that part of the For No Time to Die is not in the novel. It's not in the short story. It was written in, and written in years after Ice Station Zebra.
Well, yeah, Ice Station Zebra was 1968. So, yeah, this was good. It's way to take something from a little bit ago and be able to incorporate it in. That really good job.
Yeah, it's like, I think they did borrow that from that film. So there you go. All right.
All right. So we've looked at For Your Eyes Only from many angles today.
Yeah.
We saw the talent of the screenwriters, what came from the short stories, and how other elements were changed to create a very solid Bond movie.
Yeah, I think that's a wrap. We're good. This has been Dan.
And Tom.
Of SpyMovieNavigator.com and our show, Cracking the Code of Spy Movies. Subscribe to our show and your favorite podcast app and to our YouTube channel as well. Lots of fun stuff there. Thanks for listening. We appreciate you spending time with us.